We are holding on Kafala Fomar Aleph by the two dots, seven lines from the top. The Mishnah talked about that you can have a schus that suspends the soita's judgment, so they have a punishment, for 1 year, 2 years, even 3 years. We discussed in the Gemara yesterday where exactly we got those numbers from. So the Mishnah said, v'yesh schus tera gimel shanim. You can have a schus, that suspends her punishment for up to 3 years. So the Gemara asks, schus to mai? What kind of schus are we talking about? Are we talking about the schus of learning Torah? What do you mean? A woman, if she learns Torah, she doesn't have a chiyuv, she doesn't have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Yes, we're talking about yeshus. So you can't call that should be such a strong schus on the face of it. Anyway, the Gemara is going to deal with it. We're going to revisit that later. But for the moment, we're assuming that can't be a strong enough schus that it should save her for as much as 3 years. She has the practical fact that she has to learn, as we talked about yesterday, a woman has to learn the halachas she needs to know for day-to-day living. But that's not, she doesn't have the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, as such. For the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, lishma, basically. She has the mitzvah, it's part of her mitzvah. It's part of her mitzvah of Tadus and Mishpacha, for example, she'll have to know the dinim of it and so forth. It's not a separate mitzvah of its own. Ella schus the mitzvah, so you have to say, evidently it means the schus of doing mitzvah. The question is, schus the mitzvah mean magna kula hai? Does the schus of a mitzvah, does it protect a person for so long? Well, Tanya, but we learn in a braisa, as Zur Darash Rabbanachan Bayoisi, Rabbanachan Bayoisi taught the following Darasha. The pasuk says, ki ne mitzvah v'torah er, that a mitzvah is a candle, and Torah is light. So the Torah is making dependent, you know, comparing a mitzvah to a candle and comparing learning Torah to light. Light meaning
ner means the Torah mitzvah.
Because that's what we're saying. Torah is or the mitzvah is a ner, is a candle.
A candle can be lit up or not lit up.
But the point is that's the point. In other words, Loim Aloch, this tells you, Man ner ene magina elohim, ira elohim fishah, just like a candle only burns for, only illuminates for a certain amount of time, and then it goes out. Ach mitzvah ene magina elohim fishah. So also a mitzvah only gives temporary protection. That's a Torah bar. Torah then is compared to light. Loim Aloch ma'or mejin, or again, me'ir la'olam, just like light shines at all times, there's always light. The same thing, Torah, it protects the person forever. So a mitzvah then does not give any kind of long-term protection.
A mitzvah is invaluable.
Invaluable. The mitzvah itself is the mitzvah itself lasts. The mitzvah itself is a permanent thing. But we're talking about the effect of it that it has this chus that it gives to the person. Rabbi Horowitz, can we talk about it later, please?
Yes,
we don't disturb your shiur, don't disturb ours, please. Thank you. and furthermore, the braisa continues, the pasuk says, the Torah, when you walk, it'll lead you. This pasuk is also quoted in Pirkei Avos, in Tehillah. This means in this world, the Torah leads you in the right way. Where it says when you lie down, it'll watch over you. This means when a person lies down, when they're dead in the grave. And when you wake up, it will speak for you. It'll speak on your behalf as a malamet chus. That means we'll also love it in the future. Continues the braisa, like a mashal of a person who was walking in the deep dark night. Ishan and afela are both different words for darkness. Ishan means darkness, afela means deep darkness. He's afraid of thorns, and of holes in the road. Bakonim is another kind of thorns. He's also afraid of wild animals and of bandits. And the Enya Debe is a derech mahalach. He doesn't know what road is the right one to walk on. Well, Nizam Nalaya Bukashalar, well then this traveler over there in the darkness, all of a sudden he gets a hold of a torch, of a lit torch. Good. So now he's saved from the thorns, from the holes in the ground, and from the other dangerous plants. But he's still afraid, he still has to be afraid of wild animals and bandits because they tend to prowl around at night, and even him holding a torch is not necessarily going to be enough to scare them off. And he still doesn't know what's the right road to go on. Even so far, in other words, the nimshal is that a person who has a mitzvah is protected from certain things on a short-term basis. Marshall gives an explanation that the basic external dangers that a person has to deal with are the cherev, that he might be attacked by people with swords or other weapons, ra'av, famine, and epidemics. Mitzvahs we're talking about. So we're saying that the source of mitzvahs, that's why in the marshal over here we have three things. Kotzim is thorns. Kotzim is holes in the ground. Barkonim is another kind of thorn. He says the thorns, kotzim, represent the lack of food. As we find, the kotz v'dada tachmi achloch, the Eibishter tells other medicine that the ground won't produce food so easily for you anymore. You're going to have to work for it, and it's going to grow thorns and thistles and whatnot. So kotzim represents... So kotzim therefore represents the danger what is it then? So we said there's cherev, ra'av, and dever. Yeah. So kotzim represents ra'av, represents famine. Chosim represents epidemics, like a person is dead and they're buried in a hole in the ground. And barkonim represents the danger of cherev, of being killed by weapons.
What is barkonim?
Marconim is some other kind of thorns. I'm not clear why in Marshall's system that represents cherev. Okay. So at that point, so he has this chus of mitzvahs, so now he's saved from those external kinds of dangers, but he still has the danger of chaya ra and listin, which he says, the Marshall says, those represent the dangers of the Yetzer Hara and of bad companions. Who are going to get you to do the wrong thing? And he doesn't know what's the right way to go. Kivin sha'allah amad ha-shachar. Then when dawn comes, where dawn in the nimshal over here represents the Torah. So just like we're saying, ne'er mitzvah for Torah. The mitzvahs are represented by the torch that he's holding in the middle of the dark night. Now comes the morning, representing the light of Torah that's shining on him. So now at that point he's saved from the wild animals and from the bandits, because they don't prowl around by day. He still doesn't know what's the right way to go. Meaning, in other words, in the Nimshal, once he has Torah, that helps protect him from Averis and from Yisurim. Or in Marsha's system, it protects him now from the influence of the Yetzer Hara and a bad friend. But he still doesn't know. Is he going to continue going on the right way? Whatever, the Yetzer Hara can always start controlling him again. He gila parshas drachim. Once he reaches a crossroads where he knows the right way to go, nitzel mikolam, then he's saved from all of them. What the crossroads is, the Gemara will talk about later. Rashi brings the first explanation over here. Here on this part of the Gemara, where we're still quoting the Braisa, Rashi mentions the first explanation that parshas drachim here means the day of a person's death. Once he's about to die and he hasn't succumbed to the Yetzer Hara all this time, then good. Now he knows he's safe. But up until then, al tamim bas machad yom mosach. Later on, the Gemara is going to give a couple of other possibilities what parashat Zerachim means in this marshal. Anyway, the point of it is, okay. Well, actually, let's continue the bright. Dover acher, another explanation. Avera mechaba mitzvah. Averus can extinguish the schar of a mitzvah. So therefore, that's another reason why mitzvahs are compared to a candle. A candle is a small flame. It can easily be extinguished. You pour water on it or whatever, or you wave it out. The in Aveda Mechava Torah, but Avedas cannot extinguish the source of learning Torah. Shenema says, Mayim Rabim La Yuchlo L'chava Saba. Many waters cannot extinguish the love. So when a person is learning Torah out of a love for the Eibishter, even all the waters, the Mayim Azedonim of in Chassidus, it talks about, especially in Chondros Mayim, I think, that the Mayim Rabim represent all the trouble that a person has making Parnasa and all the things that distract a person from Avodah, that can't extinguish the course of Torah. So anyway, the point we're getting out of this long Braisa is that mitzvahs only give a very temporary protection. So how can you be saying in the Mishnah that the schus, we're assuming that the woman has the schus of mitzvahs and will protect her for as long as 3 years? Especially Okay, but it's still, it's a fairly long time, yeah. Omer Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says it like this. Mitzvah, the idna de osikva, a mitzvah when you're involved in doing the actual mitzvah, magna umasla. It protects you from the effect, it protects you from yisurim, from troubles. Umasla, and it saves you from getting from succumbing to the yetzer hara. When you're doing the mitzvah. So that's when we say, when we said in the Braisa, when we said over here that the mitzvah only gives temporary protection, we're talking about that, we're talking about that when you're involved with it. Only as long as you're involved with it. The idna deloid asakba, when you're not involved with doing the mitzvah, aguni magna, it will still protect you. Atsule le matzla, but it won't save you from the effects of the yetzahara. So therefore, yes, the Mishnah can be saying that this woman, the Saita, who has the schut of mitzvahs, can be saved by it for a year, 2 years, 3 years, because even though right now she's not being osik in the mitzvah, nevertheless, the protection that the mitzvah provides is more long-term than that. The protection against the Yetzer Hara is only a very temporary thing, only as long as you're involved with the actual mitzvah. Once the mitzvah is over, then your Yetzer Hara can reassert itself. But the protection against the Yisurim, that's longer lasting. That's the Mishnah is saying, as much as 3 years. Well, there is always that, right? That if you're going into a place of danger, yeah, then the mitzvah, then Torah or mitzvahs are not necessarily going to protect you. Yeah. On the other hand, Torah, bein Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, I mean, you have to take precautions, but, you know, the Rebbe always used to say that Eretz Yisrael is the safest place. Torah, bein be'idna de'osikbo, bein be'idna de'loy osikbo, whereas Torah, whether right now you're occupied with it or whether right now you're not occupied with it, magna umasla, it does both. It protects you from Yisurin, as well as it protects you from the effects of the Yetzirah. That's Rabbi Yosef's understanding. Maslo Rabba, so Rabba it says on the side of it here. So Rabba asks, and then how can you say that? Hello, my answer. By that logic, Doig Vachi Tovel Milo Aski Batora, the famous Talmud Chachamim, Doig and Achi Tovel from David HaMelech's time, weren't they constantly involved in learning Torah? They were great Talmud Chachamim. According to your logic, that Torah, even when you're not occupied with it, protects you from the Yetzer Hara. So why didn't their Torah protect them from the Yetzer Hara? They were both Rishayim. They both, as the Gemara is going to say a little further, they were both enemies of David. They were harassing him. They were pursuing him. David Doeg gave Lashon Hara to Sheol and wound up the whole city of Noiv here. Akoyanim was wiped out because of him. Achitofel, we talked about over a week or two ago, and the whole story of Avshalom. He gave Avshalom the advice to go and rape his father's Pelagim, and afterwards he gave advice to go and take the army and kill David. So Doeg and Achitofel were both Rishayim. But if you're saying that learning Torah protects a person from the effects of the Yetzer Hara, then new, what happened over there? We're middle of Chafalah Hamad Aleph. But if we're saying Machla, that it saves the person, yes, the person has free will, but we would expect that it would have helped them control this Yetzer Hara. Not, of course they have free will, but we should expect that the Yetzer Hara shouldn't have been as potent. Just because they're learning Torah. Now, okay, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh points out in his Pirush in a number of places that it has to be that you're learning Torah l'shma. If you're learning Torah shaloi l'shma, and the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin that in fact Doeg and Achitofel didn't, then it doesn't have that effect. They learn Torah in order to pride themselves on look what great Talmud HaChamim that we are, or even Lakanter in order to attack people using it. So that doesn't have the same effect. We're not talking about that. But okay. Ela Omar Rava. No. Let's say a little differently. Torah be'idna de'asikwa magna umasla. Torah, when you're actually occupied with learning Torah, it does both. It protects you from Yisurim and it saves you from the Yetzer Hara. Be'idna de'loy asikwa. But when you're not learning Torah, aguni magna, it still has the same effect of protecting you from Yisurim. Absolutely, le'masla. But it doesn't protect you, it doesn't guard you against the Yetzer Hara. That's Torah. But therefore, so that answers the question about Doeg and Achitofel. When they were learning Torah, yeah, it would protect them. But as soon as they're finished learning, then it doesn't have the same effect on the Yetzer Hara anymore. Because that at least it accomplishes Aguni Magna, it saves the person from Yisurim. That's where the whole point we're developing over here is, in the case of the woman, well, so far we're assuming she doesn't have the schos of Torah because she's not mitzvah v'oisa. We're going to revisit that soon. But for the moment, at least we're talking for a man, then, who has a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, when he's learning it and when he's not learning it, it protects him from Yisurim. Tosfos points out that the vote is also a Talmud Chacham, especially a Talmud Chacham that Torah Yom Nasei, when he's learning Torah, but even times when he's not actively involved in learning Torah, he's still thinking about it. And therefore, that has a certain effect. It doesn't have the halacha of learning Torah. For example, you don't make a bracha for Virur, but in the end, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of Torah with Virur, but still, it's something. Mitzvah, ben be'idna de'asikva, ben be'idna de'lo'asikva, whereas a mitzvah, sigh when you're actually occupied with it, and sigh when you're not actually occupied with it. Aguni magna, it does save a person from yisurim. Asula le'matzla, but it never has the effect of protecting a person, of guarding a person against the yetzer hara. So that's what we're saying, in other words. There are different kinds of mitzvahs, but we're talking mitzvahs collectively. I mean, and even the mitzvah of tzedakah doesn't necessarily protect you against the yetzer hara. We're saying it protects you from yisurim, it brings brachas, whatever, but to protect you against the yetzer hara, what Rava is saying, for that you need Torah, and for that you actually have to be learning Torah right then in order to be protected against the yetzer hara. Yisurim, yes, if you're not learning Torah at the moment, but you were before, or you were doing mitzvahs, then the source of that can protect you from yisurim. Rabbi Noam, Marshall also talks about the idea that when we're saying over here that the mitzvahs give a short-term benefit and Torah gives a long-term benefit, Marshall explains part of it is also that it means mitzvahs give you a short-term, meaning short-term as in this world. Torah gives you a more long-term benefit, a more long-term protection, meaning la'olam haba.
So there's both.
We're talking over here, the Gemara is primarily talking about over here about short-term versus long-term in this world. But Marshall adds, there's an extra layer of it also because Tosfos asked the question over here that the Braith has said before, that mitzvahs only protect you l'fisha. According to Rava's understanding now, what do we mean? I mean, a mitzvah, we're saying that if you're talking about Yetzer Hara, then it doesn't protect you at all, not when you're doing it, not short-term and not long-term. And if you're talking about Puranos, if you're talking about Yisurim, then Rava is saying it protects you long-term. And that's where Marsha comes in and says that when we started talking about, when the Braisa talked about short-term and long-term, it means Olam Hazeh versus Olam Haba. So therefore, Rava can be understanding that in this world, mitzvahs give you a long-term protection. And therefore, our Mishnah can be saying that a woman, a soter, can have up to 3 years that the source of the mitzvahs can protect her from the consequences of the soter water. But when the Braita had said before that mitzvahs are like a candle, it's only a short-term thing, short-term in the sense of Olam Hazeh versus Olam Haba. You still have. I mean, a person has done Averis during their lifetime, which you need protection against it, right? I want to revert also that we say that the Eivishter judges a person every day. We say that the Eivishter judges a person once a year. We say the Eivishter judges a person after they die. And also, there's going to be a judgment lost in love when Mashiach comes. So what do you need that last judgment for? L'chora, once the person's dead, what else? Because they still have an effect on this world. What you did during your lifetime has an effect. You have children who follow in your ways for good or the opposite, chas v'shalom. You have people that you came in contact with that you affected positively or otherwise, etc. So all that keeps on adding up. So therefore, if there's things that a person did during their lifetime that had an untoward effect on someone else, and that may end up going down the generations, and you need some protection about that.
Actually, shouldn't do
Avera. No, but if we're talking about Lo Lamaba, then yeah.
Obviously, shouldn't do
Avera,
and that's what
Torah protects you. No, but that's not Tula. We're distinguishing between Magna, which is Puranos, which is Yisurim, versus Matla, which is preventing you from doing Avera in the first place. Okay. going back to the original question now, what kind of schos are we talking about that the soita has, that's the protector for all these years? So we started saying that it can't be schos of Torah because she's not mitzvah body, so she doesn't have a mitzvah to learn Torah. That's what brought us into assuming that it means schos of mitzvahs, and that brought us into this whole discussion. Rabbi Nama, no, la'olam schos Torah. We are actually talking about the schos of Torah. So you're arguing a woman is not mitzvah voice. So how can you say that the schos of Torah is going to protect her? The answer is nihid pekuda lemifkada. It's true that she may not have a mitzvah to learn Torah, but agra. But nevertheless, there is the reward, the makri namasnin benayhu, that they work to matriach themselves to bring their children to school in order to learn. Makri means to learn Tanakh, to learn Chumash and the rest of Tanakh, Mikra, and Umasiyan, and to learn Mishnayos, that they bring them there. But not
drives what is it?
What?
Agra.
Agra means the reward. The Makri and Umasiyan Benayu, that they arrange for their, that they bring their children to school to learn Tanakh and to learn Mishnayos. But not from Lahula Gavrayu, they're also with Beit Medrasha, and they wait up for their husbands until they come home from, or not wait up, or actually Rashi says, they wait for their husband, they send their husbands out of town to learn Torah, like Rachel did with Rabbi Akiva, like many other examples that we learned about in Sobas, and they wait patiently for them to come back. Until they come from the Beit Medrash. So for that, don't they share in the reward for that? So yes, they don't have their own Torah learning, but they have. They share in the schus of their husbands and sons learning. I mean, is she trying to arrange at least then that other people are learning? You know, you have the famous story in the Kutta Deburim about the childless couple that went to the Baal Shem Tov for a bracha, and he took them to the city where all the boys had the same name and all the girls had the same name. And what was there 100 years earlier? There'd been this childless couple over there who endowed schools and yeshivas and whatnot for the whole city. Going back now to the Braisa that we quoted, the long Braisa that explained the difference between Torah and Mitzvah. And by the way, you know, I mean, one idea about this difference between Torah and Mitzvah, some Arsha and Maharal and a number of other Mefarshim talk about the idea. Another reason why we're comparing Mitzvah to a candle is a candle you need to have an actual physical wick, and you need to have some kind of physical fuel for a candle to burn. Therefore, Mitzvahs are compared to that because you need a gashmiyus dikruk to do Mitzvahs. With Torah is compared to light, the light in general, because sunlight or whatever, which doesn't necessarily need to be tied to something physical, because Torah is a physistic thing. And therefore, there's also the idea they talk about that's the idea also why mitzvahs have more of a short-term effect, and Torah has more of a long-term effect, because the growth, after all, is only a short-term existence. The seichel is eternal. I mean, in Tanya these days, Al-Tanab is talking about sort of the other way around, that mitzvahs have a certain advantage over Torah and that they're rotten alien. But in various places, in Siddhas, it talks about, you know, there's a certain advantage of mitzvahs over Torah. Mitzvahs have the advantage in that they're rotten alien, which is higher than Chachmah. On the other hand, Torah has the advantage that it's modern l'nefesh, that it's modern and levush l'nefesh, and then halachas sheva Torah are the crown, because they go there, they're even higher than the highest rotten alien, etc.
That's
it.
Right,
but there's the idea. There's two different levels in that. On one hand, that means that Torah is greater than mitzvah. On the other hand, it means that mitzvah's maisa is greater. Why is Torah so great? Because it leads to going back to the Braisa then before, so we gave this whole marshal about a person who's walking in the darkness, and they start off with a torch, and then comes dawn, and then we say that he comes to Parshas Drachim, and he's saved from all the dangers. My Parshas Drachim, what do we mean by the Parshas Drachim, the crossroads? Amar Chista, Zet Tamar Chacham V'yem Misa. This means the Tamar Chacham when he dies. Because when he's a Tamar Chacham, when he dies, so he knows then that throughout his lifetime he's never gone away, he's never gone off the derech, then good, now he knows he's safe. Up until now, the famous thing with Yerchan and Kohen Gadol. He was Kohen Gadol for 80 years, became a Stuki. But once he's on his deathbed, then he knows he's safe. If he's a Baal Shiva, fine. Instead of Gemur Mechel Lamed. But the point is, he knows that in his current state, he's never fallen from his current state. why they call it Parashat Zerachim. Some before Shem say a vort. We have the famous story with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, where he says, I have two ways and two paths in front of me, and you're there, but there's a derech my see. So like in a certain sense, even when a person is on his deathbed, yes, there is still the possibility that that he's going to go, that you know, there's Gan Eden and there's Gehenna ahead of him, and he may not know which one. And Chassidus talks about the famous idea that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying, yes, of course, I learned Torah, and I taught Torah my whole life, but what am I really befinning you? During his lifetime, he never took the time to think about that. Because forget about what am I doing? I have work to do. I have a whole generation to lead. But now he finally has the chance to think about, okay, but where am I doing? Anyway, Reb Nachman Beis Chacham is a Tamar Chacham v'Yiras Chet. This means another meaning of this Parashat Zerachim is a Tamar Chacham who has achieved Yiras Chet. Once he's become a Tamar Chacham, he's also achieved Yiras Chet. So now. The fact that he knows Torah will make sure that he knows to do mitzvahs and to do what he's supposed to do and stay away from what he's not supposed to do, and Yiras Chet will prevent him from following his Yetzer Hara. So that's also the sense. He's at the Parashas Zerachim and now he's safe. This means the Tamar Chacham who is able to reach a conclusion in his learning that is actually al pi halacha. The meaning, in other words, going back to the marshal over there, he has mitzvahs, he has Torah, but he's still in danger from the Yetzer Hara. So he doesn't know so he's safe from the Yetzer Hara now. He has Torah, so let's say he's safe from the Yetzer Hara, because we said before that Torah will protect him from the Yetzer Hara. But now he still doesn't know. Is he going on the right path or not? Is the Eibishter going to assist him? When he sees that Sarka Shmaita, Liberty Hilchasa, that he's able to come to conclusions that are in accordance with Halacha, and that implies that the Eibishter is with him, that the Shechina is with him, then Nitzel Mikolam, then he knows he's on the right path. And actually, some of the Poroshim say that's the vote. Once he sees that he's able to learn Liberty Hilchasa, then he knows the Eibishter is with him, the Shechina is with him, therefore that's extra protection against the Yetzer Hara and against all those other various things.
Means he
knows the basic facts, what we call Mishnah, what the Gemara yesterday called Gemara. He knows the ins and outs of it, what we call Gemara, and yesterday the Gemara called Svara. And he actually thinks through things and is able to come to conclusions that actually are correct. As opposed to, you can have a person who knows all the facts and comes up with all kinds of convoluted populum, and then he comes out to a wrong conclusion.
Right. In other words, it's a thought process.
Another explanation. We said before in the Braisa, Avera Mechaba Mitzvah and Avera Mechaba Torah, that Averas can extinguish the schos of mitzvahs, but not the schos of Torah. Amr Rav Yosef, Darshi Rav Nachman Bar Yosi, Lahai Kro Kisinai. Rav Nachman Bar Yosi, Darshi in that Pasuk, this Kine Mitzvah Torah, or like Sinai, like something that came directly from Har Sinai, like something it's an absolute truth, what he said. Actually, Ben Yoyada also says a verse that Ki Sinai, in the sense that the Gemara in Brachos that mentions that the Jewish people ask the Eibishter, you remember everything, are you going to remember the Chet Eibel? And Eibishter says, no, that I'm willing to forget and overlook when Mashiach comes. So what about if you're forgetting things, are you going to forget Maya, if you're going to forget the fact that we stood at Har Sinai and accepted the Torah? And Eibishter says, no, I'll never forget that you said Anochi. So Darshi Lahai Kilkraki Sinai, this that we're saying that the source of Torah, in this case of accepting the Torah at Har Sinai, is never extinguished, that fits with this Jerusha that we just said. The Umole Joshua Doig Bachitofel Hachi, and had Doig and Achitofel Darshan the Pasuk the same way, not literally the Pasuk. The Pasuk is in Mishlei, which was written by Shlomo Melech, but in other words, if they had realized this idea, Loi Rotfu Bosa David, then they would not have pursued David. Now, what are we talking about? Dichtiv, as it says in the pasuk, Lamer, they said, let's pursue him, let's get rid of him. They say, Elikim Azovoy, Lamer, they say, Elikim Azovoy, remember, the Eibishter has abandoned him. Therefore, the pasuk continues, Ridfu, Vesifsuhu, he ain't master. Chase him, catch him, there's nobody to save him. What's going on over here? After the whole story with Bathsheba, they figured he's done such a terrible Avera, which at least on the surface of it, it was an Eishes Ish. Okay, we learned that Kolayim and David Chater, etc., but at least on the surface, it was an Isser of an Eishes Ish. So they took the view then, oh, in that case, then forget about it. He's a goner. Now we can pursue him. We can try to kill him. And the Eishes is not going to save him. He's lost his chosin. They didn't realize this part that it's Ein Avera Mechaba Torah, that Avera, even if we say it was a full-fledged Avera, that wouldn't have extinguished the schos of David learning Torah. If they had realized that, they never would have tried to get at David. Ah, so Rashi talks about that maybe. So maybe. Well, there's that. Not Rashi, actually. Tosfos Shan says over here that maybe we shouldn't be Gerdes. Maybe we shouldn't be Gerdes Doeg, because Doeg lived long before that. Doeg died long before the whole story about Sheva, so maybe it should just stay after Tosfos. Okay, the Poshim talk about there might be possibilities. We usually say, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, that Doeg and Achitofel never saw each other. Doeg died before Achitofel was born. There could be Madrashas Chalukas on it. There could be alternate versions according to which they were contemporaries, and Doeg was still alive at the time. My Drush, so what happened? What did Doeg and Achitofel Darshan to feel that David is a goner, that the Eibishter has left him and therefore he's vulnerable? They said, the Pasuk says, well, the Eibishter should not see any improper thing in you, and because if he does, the Shav Me'acharecha, he will turn around from following you, meaning in other words that they felt that he'll abandon him, so they felt that's it. David has forfeited the protection of the Eibishter.
But even if that was the case of the Shav, well, what did they do? How did it give them? It felt it gave them the right to kill him.
They argued that, you know what, we're you know, if. But at least they felt that, you know what, he's a goner. You know what, the Eibishter is not protecting him anymore. Yes, he ought to be brought to justice for what he did.
What was the purpose of the submission of the testament?
They said Lamer Elikim Azavai. They said the Eibishter has abandoned him.
Why, based on what?
Based on another pasuk in the Torah that says, "V'lo yira b'cha ervas dover," the Eibishter should not see any matter of erva in you, v'shav me'acharecha, because then he'll turn around from following you. The context is talking about an army camp. It's actually today's Rambam Gimel Prakim, that when you're in an army camp, you have to keep certain standards. V'nishmartim kol dover ra, and because otherwise, if the Eibishter sees a dvar erva in you, then he's not gonna go along with the army camp and protect you in battle.
Just an army camp?
I mean, we're saying more generally. We're saying it applies more generally. If a person acts in an unsneistic way, then the Eibishter abandons him. So that's what they figured. But they didn't realize what Rabbi Nachman Bar Yosi taught. Sha'aveira mechaba mitzvah and aveira mechaba Torah. That an aveira can extinguish the schus of mitzvah, but not the schus of Torah. Even if we say on a straightforward level, and remember, we learned in the first parak, that according to the Rambam anyway, when we're trying to talk the Sota out of going through the whole ritual, we explain to her the story of Reuven and the story of David on the simple level. We tell her straight out that David was Mizame with an Ashes Ish, and yet he did Shuvah, and you should also, you know, yeah. Now, so we quoted the first part of the pasuk before. We said, "Mayim rabim lo yuchlu b'chavas ha'ava," that many waters cannot extinguish the love of the love between a person and the Eibishter, representing then the idea that even the waters of Averus can extinguish the schar of Torah, the schus of Torah. So now let's explain the last part of the pasuk. The pasuk continues, "In yitin ishes kalayim beis ha'ava," if a person were to give all the wealth of his household for this love, boiz yavuzuloi, they would make fun of him. My boiz yavuzuloi, my boiz yavuzuloi, what does that mean? Amar Ula, loy k'shimin achi Azariah, meaning not like the case of Shimon, the brother of Azariah, the loy k'Rabbi Yochanan de Ben Yisiyah, and not like Rabbi Yochanan, who was supported by the family of the Nasi, elik k'hilul v'shevna, but rather the pasuk is talking about a case of hilul v'shevna. Namely, these are all cases, boiz yavuzuloi, they will make fun of him, wait, meaning in other words like this, Shimon was a Talmid Chacham, he was supported by his brother Azariah. And in fact, in Zvachim, in the first or second Mishnah in Zvachim, calls him Shimon Achi Azariah, what we're calling him in the Gemara over here. He's known in history as Shimon, the brother of Azariah, because Azariah supported him and made it possible for him to learn. They did a Yisachar Zvulun arrangement, in other words. Similarly, with Rabbi Yochanan and Devei Nasiya, they supported him and made it possible for him to learn. That's not what the pasuk is talking about when it says Boiz Yavuzuloi. Rather, we're talking about the case of Hillel B'Shevna. Why? The Chiyasa of Dimi, when Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Omar, what happened was like this. Hillel and Shevna Achihabu. Hillel and Shevna were brothers. Hillel Osef Batoda, Shevna Ovid Iska. Hillel spent his time learning. Shevna was doing business. Lasoik, later on, Amalei, Shevna said to Hillel, Tonare Velithlo, come, let's make a deal, and we'll split the course of your learning. At that point, Yatsabas Kova Amra, this pasuk in Yitzin Ishes Kalahin base of going, if a person were to give all the wealth of his household, they would scorn him, they'd make fun of him. Meaning, in other words, basically, Shevna is being told, you're too late. If you had come b'chachila, you're offering Hillel starting out to learn full-time, you're offering to help him, like Azalia did to Shimon, and like Devei Nasiya did to Rabbi Yochanan, fine. But you want him after the fact, after he's been learning Torah in great poverty. Rashi mentions over here the famous story in Yuma that they were up on the roof on the skylight over there because he didn't have the money to get into this matter. Now, after the fact, you're coming to offer him money and get some of the schar of his learning. Nothing doing. You know what? Actually, the Parshim say if Hillel had accepted, at that point he would be the Barzir Huzulai. They'd make fun of him. How are you talking that you're giving away the schools of your learning? But Marshall says that actually that's why the double expression Barzir Huzulai means that Shevna lost out in Olam Hazeh because it could have happened the same way as we call Shimon the brother of Azariah. If Shevna had supported Hillel to begin with, then Hillel would be known in history as Hillel the brother of Shevna. So he lost that out in Olam Hazeh, and he lost in Olam Hazeh, but he didn't get the schar of Hillel's learning. But this is the whole concept of a Yisachar Zvulun partnership, which actually there's a considerable discussion in the postgame about the ins and outs how it's mutter and how not. In what ways is it mutter to do a Yisachar Zvulun partnership like that? For example, the Beis Yosef mentions in one of his Shuvahs that it's b'chlal, it's only allowed if the Talmid Chacham has otherwise no way of supporting himself. Like we're saying over here about Hillel, or not no way, but like he's not even making ends meet. Like Hillel over there was just making a small coin every day and using half of it for the entrance fees of his medrash. If the Talmid Chacham has some kind of independent way of supporting himself, then you can't. Not everybody agrees to that, but that's what the Beis Yosef writes. But there's others. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a long shuvah about it, where he says that the only way Yisachar Zvulun partnership would work, Rav Moshe says, is if the Zvulun is willing to give away half his wealth, no less.
But what are we talking about? Zvulun still has to learn Torah.
Of course, Zvulun has to learn Torah. He'll be kaveyitim. He'll learn the perek echad shachos, perek echad arvis. And Yisachar will sit and learn full time. Mind you, there is, by the way, a medrash that mentions that, speaking of these psukim and shiashirim, there's a pasuk near there in shiashirim that mentions something about 1,200 elach l'cha shloimer v'asayim l'nerutim as period. There's a medrash that says there's a comparison between Yisachar and Naphtali. Yisachar was supported by Zvulun. Naphtali also spent their time learning Torah. That's why in their own kodesh out there, you have the symbol for Naphtali, his hands opening a sefer and learning. But Naphtali didn't have a Zvulun to support them. They learned Torah even though they were poor. And they get the much bigger schar. So Yisachar effectively gets the 200, Naphtali gets the 1,000.
Well, when you're offered.
Then it depends. You ask your mashpia. Continues with the Mishnah, it said, Omer ben Azai. So ben Azai had said, based on this, it was saying that the schos can protect the soter. Chayavad and Molama the schos, we said that a person should teach his daughter Torah. This way the schos can protect her. And then we said, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Kolam Molama, Mr. Torah, Molama Tiflus. Anybody who teaches his daughter Torah is teaching her Tiflus. Which we said yesterday, two possibilities what Tiflus means. Either that Tiflus, the Rashi says that Tiflus means immorality. And the Rambam says it means basically like silliness, frivolity. What do you mean? A lot of tiflus after that? How can he call Torah tiflus? Ela ima ki'ilu limza tiflus. It's as if he's teaching with tiflus. Why? Amar Rav Abba, my time of the Rav Eliezer. What's Rav Eliezer's reason why he said that? Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Ani chachma shachanti arma. I, chachma, live together with chachma, meaning Torah, live together with arma, with cunningness. Meaning, once the chachma of Torah goes into a person, a certain cunningness, a certain slyness gets in there as well. So what happens? So you have the same problem with a man also. The difference is, Marashah says that a man, when he gets that slyness, it will help him understand what the Rishayim are planning in order to be able to counteract that. Women, who especially in those days didn't have very much of a role outside of the household, that cunningness, that slyness is more likely to have a negative effect on them. So the Rambam writes that a man should not teach his daughter Torah b'chalal, not Torah shebichsav, not Torah shebalpeh. However, if he teaches her Torah shebichsav, that's not tilum olam b'tiflus. This tiflus is only tilum olam b'tiflus, only Torah shebalpeh. Because only Torah shebalpeh has that give and take and that ins and outs, that kind of thing that gives the person that kind of slyness and So again, according to Rashi, the idea is that now that if a woman is learning Torah and she's not able, she's not in a position to be able to use to be able to use the armor of it for positive ends, like Marshall is saying, then she's going to wind up using it. That she'll figure out how to do improper things in secret.
So to begin with, she's already flawed.
So that's why I was saying yesterday that the Mayor Shapiro said that nowadays women are learning lots of tiflus anyway. Don't worry about the ki'ilu malam the tiflus. You have to teach them. But yeah, okay. We're talking those days. Yeah. According to the Rambam, the idea is that when we say that tiflus means silliness or whatever it means, that a woman without having a proper background basically in what Torah is all about, without having a woman is more bina than chachma, therefore she's gonna wind up using the ideas of Torah for thinking of them as being silly and frivolous and unimportant and whatever. Yeah. Again, not 100% of the time, obviously. You know, we have many examples in Jewish history of women who were great Talmud Chachamim. We're talking Torah al-Roi Tadabri. V'Rabbanan, so okay, the Rabbanan, meaning Ben Azai, Hai Ani Chachma Mai Avile. What do they do with this Pasuk Ani Chachma, Shachanti Arma? If they're saying, if Ben Azai is saying that Abed Abi, you should teach your daughter Torah, then what about this Pasuk? What about the Arma? The answer is, Midboiler L'Chirab Yosef of Chanina. He uses it to teach us what Rabbi Yosef of Chanina said. Da'amar Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, Ein Divrei Torah Miskaimin, Divrei Torah only lasts Elav Mishum Mamid Asrei Orum Aleihen, only with somebody who makes himself Orum for them. Shenema, Nichoch Meshachanti Orma. Now, what does Orum mean? So Rashi says it means that he becomes Orum in the sense of naked, in the sense of lacking everything. The meaning of the person gives up everything else in life and focuses solely on learning Torah. Then that's how Torah lasts by him. Then Rashi says another explanation that we're still using Orma in the sense of slyness, but what we Rashi says that the second explanation, Rashi says that Orma is Meloshon Arema, a pile, that he piles up little by little to learn from many different people in order to learn many different approaches to learning and learn everything that he possibly can. And then there are other reports, and we'll explain that also it can be in the sense of armor, of slyness, of cunningness that we said before, meaning that the person carefully figures out what will be the most effective way for me to learn and retain what I learn as much as possible. I'll use whatever trick there is in the book to be able to do that. That's
one advantage to bring these leaders into the Torah. I mean, slyness.
Because slyness can be a good thing. Look, we have in last week's parasha, right? That Yaakov had to use it against Esav. That's what Marshall is saying. That when you have, you know, if you're just purely an ish tummy, you don't know what's going on in the world, you know. Then you know, meanwhile you have the tricksters and the con men and whatever are doing their stuff, and you don't know how to, you know, you don't realize, you know, you look as we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow. You see people who look good on the outside, and you think they're really good. When you have a little armor, then you can look below the surface and realize what's really going on over here.
Meaning,
The Gemara says you should be Orum B'Yira. You have to be sly when it comes to Yiras Shemayim. Yeah, you have to also. It's not so simple to be a Yore Shemayim. Yeah. You have to be sly. In other words, you have to be wise to the tricks of the Yetzer Hara. I mean, we don't have a lot of time for stories, but there's a short story involving, I think it was Rav Naftali Rupshitzer, I think it was, where one time somebody brought him several hundred rubles. And then afterwards, he had one person came to him asking for the whole couple of hundred rubles for a natan for his daughter or whatever it was. And then somebody else came asking, you know, he started thinking to himself, is it right to give it all to this one person? Maybe I should split it into smaller amounts and give it to a bunch of different people. And he finally realizes after thinking it over a little bit, that the first idea to give it all to this one poor person came from the Yetzer Tov, and the other idea to split it up into sections came from the Yetzer Hara. And he went and did the first one. That's an example of Orum B'Yira. Yeah, the person needs this armor. You need this slyness to realize that to be wise to the Yetzer Hara's trick. Omer Rav Yochanan, Ein Divrei Torah Miskaimin Elo B'Misha Meitzim Atzmei K'Misha Einoi. Divrei Torah only lasts by a person who makes himself as if he doesn't exist. Shenema V'Achochma Me'ayim Timotzei. Chochma, the literal meaning of the pasuk is Chochma, from where does it come? But we're understanding it as a statement. Chochma comes from Ayin. In Chassidus, we know all over the place the explanation of Chassidus of this. What we're saying over here is that Chochma is found in a person who is like Ayin, a person who makes himself like Ayin, like nothing, total bittul. Then the Mishnah continued, Rabbi Yeshua Omer Roitzi, Shavuchullah, that Rabbi Yeshua had said a woman would rather have a calf and tiflus, and tiflus and frivolity, being close with her husband, etc. Metishkabim and a precious rather than having 9 kabim and having to abstain. My comma, what does he mean? Hoka comma, he means like this. Roitzi ishiv a kav v'tiflus imo. She would rather have the 1 kav, a small amount of food, as long as there's tiflus with it. Again, tiflus, according to Rashi, means tashmish, more than that she'll have 9 kavim, that, for example, that she'll have, so they'll be living comfortably, they'll have a generous parnasa, but they'll be pritious, that they'll have to stay away from tiflus. So therefore, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua is saying the same idea, not quite the same as Rabbi Eliezer, but making a similar point. And given that a woman wants tiflus, and since we're saying that when you teach her, when you learn Torah, ki'ilu melamda tiflus, then it's not really the appropriate thing for her. Tosfos, by the way, brings from Aveda Chananel that actually the a couple of different meanings. One of them we discussed yesterday, that, for example, a woman would rather have that her husband takes a lower-paying job in town and is more often available for her owner rather than taking a higher-paying job out of town and there's less time for owner. Then Tosfos brings another explanation that the 1 versus 9 kavim is actually very precise based on something we learned in Ksubas about the amount of food that a man has to provide for his wife if he's out of town and providing for her through a third party. If you figure out the amounts over there, you figure out that versus the amount that he owes her if he's murdered, if he refuses to have relations with her, where her Ksuba keeps on getting augmented, it comes out at a 9-1 ratio. Then the Mishnah continued, Hu Hayomer, he, Rabbi Yeshua, used to also say, Chosid Shoter, he mentioned four categories of people that are Mevalei Olam. They wear out, they destroy the world. The first one of them is Chosid Shoter. Hechi Domi Chosid Shoter, what does that mean? Kidoim to Kotova Itza Benara, for example, you have a woman drowning in the river, and he says, Lab Erdach Adalis, the Kuli Baba Atzula, it's not sneeristic to look at her and save her. That he's acting like a chassid, but it's a chassid of shoshtus. Tosfos gives another example, quoting from the Yerushalmi, that, for example, you see a child drowning, you're wearing tefillin, well, I don't want to dive in with my tefillin, I'll ruin that, let me take off my tefillin first. Meanwhile, the kid can drown, never. And the Yerushalmi gives a couple of other illustrations of it also. Heichidami Rasha Arum, what's an example of a sly Rasha, which was the second one in Rabbi Yeshua's list? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Zeham Matim Dvar of Ladayan, Kainim Shiyahu Baal Din Chavere. This refers to somebody who goes and talks over his side of a case to the Dayan before the other person shows up. Now, you're not allowed to do that. The Dayan himself is also to listen to it. But so Ben Yoyada explains, let's say, for example, this Rosh Arum, what does he do? He slyly goes to the Dayan, not saying, I'm going to be by a din Torah on you on this case. I want to tell you my side ahead of time. The Dayan will know that's also. He won't listen to him. But rather, he goes to him like this, hypothetically. You know, hypothetically, just as a matter of love, learning Torah. In a case like this, you know, what would happen? And meanwhile, it's gotten into the Dayan's head, and therefore, when the actual Din Torah comes, he's already inclined towards that guy. He's already inclined towards that guy's side of things because he heard it first. Okay. Yeah, that's the Rosh Aru. Rabbi Boa says a different explanation. This is referring to a case of a person who gives 1 dinner to a poor person to make up 200 zuz. Meaning, Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah, the last Mishnah of Peah, Misha Yeshlem Asayim Zuz, a person who has 200 zuz, which is usually in those days was enough to live on for a year. Logit, Lekat Shiskol Peah or Maitoni, he's not allowed to take any of the Matnasanim, Lekat Shiskol Peah or Maitoni. However, Hayulai Masayim Chosid Dinner, if he had 199 dinner, Afilo Elas, then even if they offer him 1,000 all at once, or even if 1,000 people are offering him all at once, how is it Yitzil, then he's allowed to take it? So what happens over here? This poor person has 199 dinner in. Somebody goes and offers him 1 dinner, and to put it in modern terms, you say, Yaakov, you could appreciate this, you know, like you give somebody some money and it puts them in a higher tax bracket, so they wind up losing more in taxes than they gain from the money. So the same similar idea. And Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi an actual case where that happened. There was one of the Talmudim of Rebbe who had only 199 zuzim. So Rebbe used to, every 3 years when it came to time for Maaseh Ani, he would give him all his Maaseh Ani, and Rebbe was very rich. The Maaseh Ani was a substantial amount. one time some of Rebbe's Talmudim went and then they got jealous of him. How come he gets all this Maaseh Ani? So they offered him one dinner, and then the next time he counted his money, he realized now he has 200. Now he can't take Maaseh Ani anymore. So what did Rebbe do? Rebbe was very upset. He said, you know, this is exactly what the mission is describing over here as Rosh Ha'olam. Actually, the Yerushalmi says a little differently, that Rebbe described as Makos Purushim, the fourth one on Rebbe Yishuv's list. Anyway, what Rebbe did is he told some of his other, he hinted to some of his other Talmudim. He didn't tell them outright because he didn't want this Talmud to overhear. He hinted to them, take this guy to the store and get him to spend some money. And that way he's back below 200, and then he can give him his Maaseh Ani again. He could refuse it, but if he didn't realize, in this case, he didn't realize.
200, you don't give
Maaseh Ani. And actually, Tosfos also quotes from the Yerushalmi that another detail of that din is if the person only has 50 zuz, but he's doing business with it, then it's the equivalent of 200 zuz. 50 zuz that you're actually actively doing business with is the equivalent of 200 zuz that are just sitting idle.
200 and below?
Below 200 you can take. But if you have 50 that you're doing business with, you also can't take Maaseh Ani and so forth. Rav Asi Amar Rav Yechanan, a third possibility, what's the Rosh Ha'arum? Zehamasi Eitzel Limkum and Chasim Watim. This is somebody who gives advice to heirs to sell some of the property, some of the estate, when there's only a small amount of it. Now we learned in Ksuvus, and a little bit in Nedarim, that when only the boys inherit, the girls don't inherit when there are boys, as we know. But the girls are supposed to have they're supposed to have mezonos. They're supposed to have a certain amount to sustain them, to keep them going, for food and clothing and whatever until they get till they're old enough to get married. That's if there's a chasim merubim. That's if there's enough to support them, and then there's still something left over for the boys to inherit. If not, then we say that everything goes to the girls for mezonos, and if there's nothing left over for the boys, tough luck. They can go beg for tzedakah, or go work or beg for tzedakah or whatever. So if somebody gives advice to sell from the chasim muatin, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yechanan, because in fact Rav Asi said in the name of Rav Yechanan, Yosomim shkodmu machru in the chasim muatin, that if Yosomim go ahead and sell some of these nechasim muatin, masha machru machru, what's sold is sold. So that's this Rosh Ha'orum is advising, basically, the advice he's giving winds up depriving the girls of what they should by right be getting, according to Tekhon HaChachamim. Abaya says another example. This is a person who gives advice to sell property in general. According to the case of Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. If somebody says, Reuven says to Shimon, I'm bequeathing my nechosim to you, on condition of acharecha l'poini. After you die, I want Levi to take over whatever's left. So then, the Yorah tradition of, so really then, by right, Shimon should not be selling any of it, because Shimon really is only entitled to Shimon is entitled to use the payers of it, basically. He doesn't really have full, the whole point is that the reason why Reuben laid it out this way is because he wanted something to be left over for Levi. So the Yorah tradition of Machav Achol, so if the first person, meaning Shimon, goes and sells any of it, or eats the produce or whatever, Pasheni Motsim Yad HaLakuchos, Divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe says, no, Levi can actually, after Shimon dies, Levi is able to go and take that property that was sold away from the buyers, because Shimon had no right to sell it. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, no, Ein Lasheni Ela Mashashi Yerushin, no, the second one, Levi, is only going to have left anything that the first one left over, Shimon. So therefore, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, it comes out, if Shimon does sell some of this property, it's valid, Levi has no recourse, therefore whoever advised Shimon to do that is a Rosh Ha'arum, because he's depriving Levi of what Reuven, the original testator, meant for him to have to begin with. I think that's finished tomorrow. Okay.